Hello and welcome to the Rear Winging It Formula One podcast. I'm your host, Ellie Ledwell, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-host,
Harry McKay.
And for the very first time, live in the flesh, a very special guest, my brother,
Kieran Ledwell.
It's lovely to have you here.
I know, it's good to be here, finally.
What do you think of our setup?
Very nice, very nice.
It's impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. Can't believe you managed to pay for all of this.
Well, you know, lots
of sponsorship money must be coming in, right?
Yeah, I did plug the chip in last episode, so...
inheritance right there, right?
Free fish and chips, I think.
Mitchell was bringing in the big money sponsorships, but since we lost him, it's got a bit tight.
Yeah, he was bringing in a soap company, a crisps company, a motorcycle hire company, you know? He was bringing them all in, but... no luck.
If only our father was Lawrence Stroll, this podcast would be number one right now.
Well, if our father was Lawrence Stroll, I think we'd both be in a Formula One car. But
maybe you wouldn't be.
I can drive. You don't have a license.
That's true. I can't drive. An F1 fan who can't
drive.
Yeah,
me either. So that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll have to get a three-seater.
And again, Max Verstappen couldn't drive when he joined F1 legally. You know, he's a 16-year-old.
It's because he was too young, not because he couldn't drive.
I'm too young. 23. Not in my prime yet.
All right. We'll use that as an excuse. All right. So currently there is Formula One post-season testing going on with Pirelli. Not everyone's a massive fan of Pirelli. Harry, what do you think?
I think as tyre companies go, I'm not sure I'd buy them for my car because I can't drive. But I think they've had issues with the tyres before. And obviously there is limited testing. So it's obviously quite important to get that feedback for them for next year. How did everyone think the tyres were this year?
I thought that at some tracks there was a lot of degradation where the softs were lasting five laps, six laps, and I don't think that's not acceptable, is it?
I think for me it's a weird position where, you know, years ago we talked about the cliff constantly. Tyres would be good, 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 and they'd drop off a cliff. Now they just peter out slowly, which means you don't need to get off the tyres straight away, but you start losing lots of time. I think it should be one or the other. Tyres should last for a long time or they should die straight away, because in that middle phase, it's just so uninteresting.
Yeah.
I think, do you know what I mean? Like there's no cliff. No one's gaining 5 seconds a lap because of tyres.
In the last race, we saw Sebastian Vettel sitting like a, you know, he said, I'm a sitting duck out here. Yeah. But because he was only losing maybe half a second or whatever against the leaders, but compared to his competitors, the people he was in a direct race with, he wasn't losing that much. It makes sense because it's quite difficult to gain a pit window from tyre dropping off.
Yeah, whereas a few years ago, he would have had to have pitted regardless and it would have saved his race in many regards. Aston Martin wouldn't have even had the choice to try and keep him long because the tyres just would not have been able to sustain that kind of pressure, as it were. He wouldn't have been able to stay out that long at all.
Yeah, they'd have blown up. We had a lot of punctures a few years ago.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's stopped a lot more.
I guess you want less punctures, but you want maybe a more durable...
It's really hard for Pirelli because, if, you know, it's weird because they're a tyre company, they're trying to sell their tyres, but they're asked to make tyres which degrade a lot.
Yeah,
they're asked to make tyres which don't last more than 100 kilometres.
Yeah,
which is such a weird concept, right?
A very hard thing to do, so I think the criticism of them is always
going
to be there.
It's a really hard job. They're never going to get it. No one's going to be 100% happy with what they do. They know
and
it will be.
The tyres this year are huge.
Mm. Oh, massive.
They've been... Like, that's why the pit stops have been slower and they're just so big and so heavy. I guess that's more to do with the regulations than it is with Pirelli, but maybe...
tyre cover things.
All of it, the wheels, the tyres, has all been different this year and I guess that is part of Pirelli.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder how much input they had on... Because the wheel arches this year were bigger. I wonder how much input they did have on decisions like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're just told, look, you make the rubber, we do the rest, or how much input they actually truly have.
Yeah.
Because it might help with, you know, factors like DEG and all that stuff if they had notes on it and passed them over. But I think it's probably more of a, you know, this is a big sponsorship, just make the rubber and deal with it. But
this is good for you.
Yeah.
You do what we want.
And I guess also the different tracks have different surfaces. So some of them are really, really rough. Like if you fell over, you'd lose your hand. It was so rough. And some of them, they're really smooth. You'd fall over and you'd slide along it. So I guess the reason you see so much variation is because the different tracks, the different surfaces that they're on, it's hard to make a tyre that's versatile to all of the different surfaces, all of the different heats, all of the different conditions, I guess maybe it's hard to be consistent.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because the consistency was the main factor, I think, this year. There was times where I think they worked quite well, and they were dropping off enough, but not too too crazy. Yeah. But there was times where it just felt like you can go forever on this set of tyres, or they last no time at all. Yeah. But it's so hard to do that when you've got, I mean, 20 plus and rising tracks to focus on.
Yeah.
So
yeah, 24 supposed to be, maybe 23 for
now.
The next season. But
we'll get to that.
I don't like the naming. I feel like sometimes if I'm running late and I can only just get on qualifying or the race in time, I miss the graphic about what compounds we actually have that week.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, how soft is the soft? Is the soft a medium? Is the soft a hard? Because at one race, the soft is the soft and the soft is a hard. So yeah. I guess when you don't see that graphic, I'm thinking, how long is this expected to last? What kind of a compound they're on? So I think we should reintroduce the confusing names and the bright colours.
Yeah. See, I like the rainbow of colours.
I like the purple, you know, like the ultra soft purple. I think that was a nice one.
I think it's definitely, I think they did it to, it's just another, lower the barrier to entry.
Mm.
You turn on the F1 and there's three different tyre types and that's it. There's a red one, a yellow one and a white one, soft, medium, hard. So if you're an average fan, that's as far as you need to take it. But for those who are more interested in F1, it would be nice to get a bit more insight into things like that, which you definitely used to get through the ultra soft, the super soft and those kind of decisions.
Mm.
I think they could just do away with the soft, hard, medium and just call them C1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, because I think people can understand you have a hard to a soft and that's a scale.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we can trust people that much.
That's true. Yeah, and then, you know, they can remind during the race that, you know, which one's softer. I think that's a good idea.
Because even if they were four different colours, but you only take three to each track, then at least when you watch it, you turn on for qualifying, you know what three compounds there are. Oh, that's 1, 2, 3, or that's 3, 4, 5, or whatever combination it is. I think maybe that would be more interesting, but
you just want more colours, don't you?
Yeah, I like it when it's bright. That's why people don't like the AlphaTauri. It's just black and white. It's a bit boring, isn't it?
I suppose. It's quite a nice looking car, I feel.
Papaya is the best colour.
Yeah.
But I'm not biased at all in any way.
No.
So we did allude to China potentially being cancelled for 2023. Mm. So the COVID policies are quite strict.
Yeah, it's still quite intense.
So. Yeah. Harry, you're our resident Chinese policy expert. What's your take on it?
I think this is quite smart, to be honest. If someone had caught an infection while they were there, they'd have mandatory quarantine in government registered hotels or places, and obviously they were not willing to be lenient on that policy, so drivers, staff, reporters would all have to be subject to this. And it is quite a scary thing. I know when my dad was there, he was terrified of them being separated and all this stuff. So it's
from
quite,
your sister?
Yeah, from my sister. So it's quite traumatic. And, you know, if there's a race coming up next, they couldn't guarantee that they would then be able to get to that one.
I think that's the big point, right?
Yeah.
Is getting to the next race. No race is worth jeopardizing part of your season for, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And
it's not like they're short of races these days.
I guess they've gone for a zero COVID policy.
Mm.
So it's when you're moving a small, like a village, a town of people.
A town.
Every
weekend,
thousands of people must be.
With all the media as well.
With all the media, with all the setting up crew, with all the mechanics, with everyone. There's just so many people to transport on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. I guess you can't risk half of the people being stuck in the country for another week. You wouldn't have the time, especially with the teams that set up and take down, because they have to head out earlier in order to get everything ready. So
it's a shame, because I quite like the track in China. I think we've had some good racing there. Good race, I remember years ago, the two Red Bulls worked their way through the pack after a lucky safety car for them and a good pit stop. It can produce some good racing, so it's a shame to lose it off the calendar. But like I said, I think there's 23 other ones to worry about.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think F1 can afford to shed a few races here and there if they really need to.
It's been 3 years since we've been to China. I hardly remember it.
Yeah, you wonder if time. Next, you know, is the situation going to be the same next year? How many years will we not have China?
Yeah.
How does that work with their contract? Who knows, right?
That's a very good point.
That's the thing. It's quite ambitious to keep putting it in and then obviously...
Yeah, you know, put it in next year, it's taken out year after. How many years are you going to play the game of, are we going to have a race in China or not, before you just say, it's just not worth it?
Do you think that the four-week gap will be replaced or should be filled, or do you think leave it be?
I think it's quite unfair. I know I was seeing quite a few fans that had already booked flights and hotels for the weekend. I think if you can possibly try and replace it with something and, you know, another track, that's fair enough. But I don't think I'd move it. It gives, especially in such a long season anyway, it just, you can have a break in between there, have a four-week gap. People can go home, see their families. I don't think it's the biggest deal.
Because I think they're trying to convince Azerbaijan to move just a week, I guess. So then it becomes a three-week gap. As opposed to four. But as you said, for the length of the season, 23 races is very, very ambitious, very long, and it's draining on people's mental resources. You know, people want to go home and see their family and have a bit of off time. It's quite a demanding job going from place to place. So I guess best leaving that one.
Leave it where it is.
Also, a bit of news this week is there's going to be a new category under the Formula One brand, and it's a women's only championship. It's going to be called the Formula One Academy, and it is potentially starting next year. Obviously, we haven't had a woman in Formula One for going on 50 years now, and even then, we've never had a regular driver. We've never had a pole podium winner. We've never had anything like that, and 50% of the planet is women. There's obviously an issue with funding. Then the 20 people who drive in Formula One, it seems crazy that there can't be space for one of them.
That's the ambitious goal. Just to get one person.
Just to get one out of 20. It should not be that ambitious. No. But sadly, it is, right?
Because the W Series was set up as a feeder into Formula One, but maybe that was a bit over ambitious at the time. Jamie Chadwick wins three championships in a row, is clearly...
Doesn't get a look in.
Clearly the best female driver there is.
Yeah.
She, I think, had a test drive at Williams, but she can't get a seat. Yeah. She can't get even a reserve driver.
Into a test drive at Williams.
Yeah, that's the thing. Come on. If it doesn't fulfill its function as a feeder series, like F2, then, you know, there's no point. It does feel like a token thing of, you know, we've taken that one step at the time to widen and make it think like we're on the progress to women in Formula One. But if it hasn't resulted in anything...
I think that it was just a bit too high expectation to go from, say, 80% of participants are karting a male and 20% are female. It's then a bit ambitious to be like, oh, we're going to have this new championship that's entirely women and expect it to have the same standard. I think you have to go a bit further back.
Yeah.
And with this new one that they're trying to aim for, it's 16 to 22 year olds, and they're going to be racing in Formula 4 cars, and it aims to be a feeder into Formula 2 and Formula 3, and then for them then to feed into Formula 1, which I think
makes sense.
Always have to go back a step, because why are there not women in Formula 1? Because there's no women in Formula 2. And there's no women in... So you have to keep going back, and even if the issues at karting level, the issues at karting level, that might be too far back for the Formula 1 brand.
Then, if they are creating these avenues of pathways in, potential pathways in, that might inspire a lot more women to get into it at a younger age,
seeing
these role models and also seeing a potential path, you know, not hitting a dead end.
You can see that it's plausible if you then see women racing alongside men as opposed to in their own category.
I think that's the big point, is what it has to result in is women racing alongside men,
integration,
and clearly showing, as they obviously can, compete at that level.
Yeah,
the problem is always going to be with something like the W Series, is there's always going to be these people who say, even if Jamie Chadwick wins three in a row, it's like, oh, but she's only racing other women.
Yeah.
That's always the argument that people are going to come back at it with, which is a silly argument. But it's hard to get around that argument without seeing her actually race against not against Mercedes, but again, against the top of the field, against F2 drivers, F3 drivers, the clear top level non-F1 drivers in the world. Like,
because I'm
that's
sure
where she has to be to really truly prove herself as that kind of caliber of driver, which she clearly is, but she just needs to be able to prove it.
Because Formula One drivers are just jockeys that have more buttons to push, and we've had a female Grand National winner, so women are clear. There's a space in sport for them to race alongside, to compete alongside. So hopefully this feeder into the junior formulas will increase participation. But there's going to be five teams, each with three drivers. That's how it's looking. But it's all very provisional, with these races held across 7 meetings with 3 at each. So you know how the junior formulas, they'll have like 3 shorter races across the weekend, or like sprint races and such like. So not full length Grand Prix. But the Formula One, as it's under the Formula One brand, they're going to subsidise £131,000. But the drivers have to come up with the rest of that money for themselves. And I guess that could be a stumbling block. Mm-hmm. Because, it can come...
That doesn't really negate the main issue of, I think, women getting into the formulas is the funding issue.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't negate the main issue, what are we doing here? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it has to be either your own money or a sponsorship deal. Mm. But if it's your own money, the average salary in the UK is four times less.
This then comes down to the issue with the sport as a whole. Is it's a rich man's game, really, isn't it?
Gentlemen's drivers. It's always going to be a thing.
I suppose this is a way of trying to solve the gendered aspect, but it's not solving the class aspect. Yes. So.
And I think if you try and fix the class aspect, the gender aspect certainly comes with
it.
Definitely come with it a bit. But maybe that's a bit too big of a big of a topic for F1 to try and fix itself.
But it is subsidizing it, and then the rest of the money the teams have to come up with. But to put $130,000 on the shoulders of a 16-year-old girl, how are you going to look at that? You know, me and Kieran, we lived in the middle of Essex on an ex-councillor estate, and people like us,
we didn't have 130 grand knocking about to join a Formula.
You know, Harry was running about in New Zealand. They don't even wear shoes out there. If I was someone in karting and I was looking promising and I had the sponsorship deal, then that's great. Mm. But if no one has come and said, "Oh, I want to invest in you," it's still not accessible. It's still not something.
Well, to think of like a really basic example, you think of Lewis Hamilton's career, just to pluck a name out of thinner, and the way his dad supported him. Do you think at any one time his dad could have stumped up £130,000 when he was 16? At that point, he might have moved up formulas, but when he was 16 years old, do you think his dad had 130 grand to be giving away to get into something like this?
To cough up,
That's talent there that could have been lost. If the only avenue was this, that is an avenue he wouldn't have probably been able to pursue.
No, exactly. It's just not... It's just going to come down to, again, the rich ones or people who already have connections within the sport. I don't know. Does Lawrence Stroll have a daughter?
Probably called Lauren Stroll or something. Who knows? Maybe. But when you look at the Formula One grid, you see the privilege on there.
Massively. And you're never going to escape that, unfortunately.
So who knows? Maybe we'll see some privileged females in
It'd
Formula
be nice
One
for a change.
It'd be nice
it?
For a change.
Be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Kieran, we'll get on to you as our first ever guest.
Thank you.
We'd like to know a little bit about you, and I'm sure our three listeners would love to hear about you. We actually have a new listener in Japan, so
shout out
to them. Thank you for listening. And if you clicked on us by accident, thank you anyway. So who is it that you root for?
Who do I root for? That's a good question. I think growing up as a kid, I was always a big Lewis fan. I'm not saying I'm not now. I think I really respect his driving and him as a person. I think I got a bit bored of him winning, to be honest, which didn't mean I wasn't a fan, but it's hard to root for the guy that always wins. It's like being a Celtic fan. It must get a bit boring.
Yeah.
So I think I'm a big Max Verstappen fan in some aspects of his driving. I'm a big Max fan. I don't know. I enjoy the sport. To have an absolute number one favourite driver, I don't think I do at the moment. I think I'm still waiting for that next person to come into the sport and really take me by take my inspiration and really, wow, this is the guy or girl. Yeah. Unfortunately, probably guy.
Or they,
this
them,
is the guy. Or
we're an inclusive podcast.
So, yeah. This is the driver that's going to like really like grab my attention.
Grab you by the bull horns.
See that young talent that you can then root for.
That
for
you
a
can
while.
Be like, oh, this is a career I can really watch. Because again, similar to Max, it's like he's going to be a world champion one day, and now he is. It's like,
it's exciting.
Now what?
Yeah, because I had that with Max, and I've always liked and respected Lewis, and I like his driving, but. Mm. Yeah, it was just always winning. It was, I don't know if this was just because I have that dramatic desire in me, but I remember that was my first race I saw was the Malaysia, 2016. I saw live, and Hamilton's car broke down right in front of us, and Rosberg sort of then won the race.
Went on.
I don't know if it was because I was like. Didn't feel that full support for Hamilton, or it was just I liked cars breaking dramatically. But I think that from then on, I knew like, oh, it's not quite the driver that I'm fully behind.
Interesting.
Yes. I think maybe Piastri could be one for me.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how well he does. To be honest,
against Lando
a really
as well, because Lando exerted complete domination this year over Daniel Ricciardo, and it'll be interesting to see how he measures up.
Yeah, can't have two Australian drivers. Falter against Lando, it'd be quite embarrassing. Yeah.
Harry has an Australian passport, so he roots for the Aussies.
It's strange how Australia always seems to have decent drivers.
Yeah.
Weber, Ricciardo, now Piastri.
Don't know, they must have a good...
They're about sport.
Because the karting scene really is so European-based, right? Yeah. Even drivers from other continents, they grow up in European karting.
Joe grew up in Sheffield, bless him.
Yeah. Exactly.
Imagine going from Shanghai to Sheffield.
God, that is
a lot of drivers are in Sheffield, right, because that's close to all the places. But
So what's your first memory then of Formula One?
So I had to think about this, and I think for me, one of my first memories, and probably because of the drama is why I remember it so well, was probably 2008 Brazil. Lewis winning the championship in such a dramatic fashion. Obviously, Massa crossed the line, was champion for two corners.
Yeah.
And a Petrov... No, was it Glock? Glock, sorry. Glock going slowly. Pass goes Hamilton, wins the championship. That specific... I don't remember much of the race, but I remember that specific moment. Mm. I remember that. And what was I at that time? 9?
We were probably going crazy.
Yeah,
watching
that's 9-year-old
me.
Like, the drama is... Yeah. Probably definitely the first race I remember that really like sparked the passion for F1 in me. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like the drama that F1 can generate, I think at times can be almost unrivaled, like the drama it can generate. And that is one of the most dramatic moments, maybe slightly biasedly given I saw it, but one of the most dramatic moments you could ever have in Formula One. And to see that you know, live on the telly, but live
on the box
definitely.
Telly, it was about a meter behind it. I think there was.
Yeah, but that, I think that definitely is my first memory of F1. Yeah. That really got me going into being interested in the sport.
It's a good moment that.
Yeah, tough to beat. Very
tough to beat. I guess also you remember because of the result as well. You remember thinking like, oh wow, British champion, and oh my goodness,
poor guy, being British,
champion for two corners.
Exactly. Yeah. It's, the race sticks in your memory for many reasons, let alone the quality of the race itself. Yeah.
So this past season, 2022, it's not been the most exciting. That we had none of their moments like 2008.
Sadly
Brazil.
Not. Yeah.
What was your favorite race though?
I think my favorite race, what I've written down here, is Singapore. I really enjoy. I love the Singapore track. I love the whole idea of the night race, and it's the first time we were there in, since 2019.
It's
been a while since we've been there. I really enjoyed it. Seeing Perez's most dominant race of his entire career. I'm a big fan of Sergio. I think he's getting more credit now, but I think he's been in F1 for such a long time. And to see him dominate a race in that way, I think was really impressive.
Yeah.
To keep those two Ferraris behind it. Maybe you could argue Singapore, it is easier to keep cars behind. But you still have to do it at the end of the day. And he managed to do it for a really long time. And I was quite impressed with his performance. And I think that was one of my favourite races of the season. Mainly because the result wasn't just Verstappen winning and Leclerc in second.
Yeah.
So, you know, like it caught your attention a bit more by not just being that it wasn't, routine result, yeah. as it were. It wasn't just a routine race, so that one stuck out to me as a good one. But there were some good races this year.
There were some good ones.
Some not so good, but some pretty good ones.
It was a bit flat in the middle.
Yeah.
I started off where we thought, oh, we're going to have a two-way championship battle, two teams, two drivers. And then that kind of faded away. And then it got a bit more exciting towards the end.
Yeah, I think with that middle stint of Ferrari really... I mean, it was exciting in the sense of what are Ferrari going to screw up next?
Yeah.
Because they really lost it.
In all aspects.
There. Yeah, exactly.
Every part.
The car wasn't great, the drivers weren't amazing, and the strategy was god-awful.
By like week three or four, when Red Bull rolled out clearly what was clearly an engine upgrade or something, well, they can't, can they? But when they really unlocked that straight line speed in their car, if you know F1 well enough, the season's over. Yeah. You see that speed they had at times, and you're like, okay, that's it. And the intrigue of the championship is gone, really. Mm. I think a few weeks in, it's quite obvious. Okay, at the very least, Verstappen is going to dominate this year. The speed that car had at times, thinking back to, was it Spa? Unbelievable, the speed he had at Spa. Was he near the back, right? Because he had a grid penalty.
Yeah, penalty.
It was like nothing to him. Absolutely nothing to him to win that race. He was a favourite to win the race on the bookies' odds. Starting towards the back of the grid.
He was back,
But no one doubted it.
No.
And they were right to not doubt it because Ferrari went and he won by a good clear margin. It was just, there's no interest in that for me sometimes.
No. Yeah. I think even as a Max fan, you don't want to see complete domination.
No, you want to see, and you know he's capable of great overtakes and great moves and defending hard, defending well. Maybe too hard sometimes.
Yeah,
definitely.
But there's no interest in seeing someone in a space. It's like watching Le Mans. Not seeing something in a spaceship whip around normal cars.
Yes. What result caught your eye the most? What stood out? What was the most surprising result from the season?
I think for me, the recent one, Brazil. Just if you said to me before the weekend started, Magnussen's going to sit on pole.
And
Mercedes is going to have a 1-2. I wouldn't have believed you.
We did watch qualifying together and I said... Mercedes 1-2. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Pace they bought to the whole week. It's not surprising given the pace they bought to the weekend, but the fact they bought that much pace to the weekend was quite surprising.
And when you consider where they were at the beginning of the season and in testing, it's like, wow, they went from there to having a 1-2, which is very impressive.
Yeah. It wasn't just a fluke, one-off, get lucky. It was both drivers performing well the whole race.
Everyone in the team, that
I think it bodes really well for them next year as well.
Yeah.
I think to have had a season like this has been really good for them in many ways.
Yeah. No, I think so. And I think it's good for the sport as well. Not that it was not such a good championship battle, because that would have been more exciting.
Yeah.
But it's good to see that strict dominance end.
Definitely.
And have that sort of spark reunited, I think, probably within the team of, okay, we've got to fight for this again, not just
being the underdogs. Yeah.
I guess
something to chase instead of defend, it's a very different position to be in.
We often see things mixed up after the new regulations come in, because some people get it right and some people get it wrong. And I think it was interesting to see that with Mercedes getting it wrong.
So wrong as well.
Yeah. With their ugly side pods that weren't really there.
They deserve to have got it wrong because they were awful.
Yeah,
and their car was silver again, which wasn't...
I like the black car. I think I like the black car.
I did like the black, yeah.
It was slick and in the night races.
It looked dangerous. I don't think that color
would have fit the 2022 car as much, though. The way their 2020 and 2021 car looked suited that colour scheme so well. Yeah, it just looks so nice.
Looked like it's maybe a bit silly, but it kind of looked like a shark to me. it looked more streamlined.
Yeah,
it was
very
really sleek.
It was like Darth Vader in person.
That's the thing, like Darth Vader, you see it coming up behind you and you just move out of the way.
I saw a clip the other day of like the Imperial March over the background and it fits so well.
Yeah.
Especially that 2020 season when Lewis was absolutely untouchable.
Yeah.
Yes. So, driver of the year, who are you picking?
So, initially, I wrote down Max Verstappen, and then I thought
to myself...
It's
a bit boring.
Well, I thought to myself, if you put Max in the fastest car on the grid and he doesn't win the championship, you'd say he's done a bad job. So, the fact he's won it, winning a championship is always impressive, but at the end of the day, if he didn't win the championship, you'd be surprised, right? So, I think for me, I switched up and I thought, I'm going to go with Kevin Magnussen.
Yeah, I think he's put in a very good drive,
For a man who wasn't going to be on the grid until... I want to say maybe not even not even three, definitely not even 3 weeks before the season started. No. Maybe 2 weeks.
It was not much days. Time. He missed out on testing.
There you go.
I was going to say, yeah. I think it was literally a couple of days before.
Yeah. A couple of days, maybe a week at the most. You know, got himself out of the contracts he was in, flew himself out to Bahrain and put himself P7 first race. Yeah. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. The first points, you know, comes in at that last notice, has their first points since 2019.
Yeah.
If they even scored, they must have.
It was a 2 year gap.
Yeah, they didn't win anything
points.
Or maybe they won something in 2020. Either way, to come in and put himself, I think I'm right in saying it was P7.
P5.
It was either 5, 6, or 7, but...
Yeah.
Shows how much I researched before the show.
It was high.
But to come in and do that and perform that well, I think was just amazing. And he, in many ways, he kept up the whole year. I don't think there's a week where you said he didn't get everything he could out of that car.
Mm. I would say
he's bought a much better car. I mean,
he's been consistent this year. And he outshone Mick to the point where Mick doesn't have a seat.
Exactly.
That's true, yeah. Jumping back in the car, you know, Mick's only had that 1 year, but this was... A lot of his fans will say, you know, he takes 2 years to get used to it, used to
you
a car.
Can't.
But
this is Formula One, you can't.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You don't get 2 years.
He had the excuse last year because it was...
His first year and
it was
rubbish, car.
Yeah, so.
And he did a lot better than Mazepin, I guess.
Yeah. But it begs the question, Mick's season looked better than Mazepin's did. Mm. He cost them more in terms of damage to the car, which I thought was quite...
Quite interesting.
Yeah, I think across the 2 years, the amount of money Mick has cost Haas in crashes... is for a small team is
and with the budget cap they can't afford it.
The return he's bought, yes, he scored his first points this year, but for the return he's bought, it's not worth the millions of pounds we're talking about that he's costing crashes.
And that's probably is what it comes down to with the decision,
probably
getting an older driver Hülkenberg back in. It makes sense just on that front of he won't bin it as much.
But I think if they don't bring Magnussen in, Mick might still be there. You're right, because they wouldn't have realised. When you compare it to Mazepin, maybe you come off quite well Mazepin. When you compare it to a pretty competent driver,
he didn't
show up, which I think is a real shame. You know, everyone looks at Mick with rose-tinted glasses because of who his dad is.
Yeah.
And maybe that's probably quite hard on him, to be fair, but I don't think he's definitely, so far, at least in his career, not lived up to the expectations of his father.
In junior formulas, he has performed... well, but he hasn't taken it to like a duck to water. He takes a bit of time to adapt, and I guess there's just not like time is money and Formula One is money, you know. That's how it revolves around.
Two things Haas are short of is time and money.
Looking ahead into next season though, do you have any predictions, like what, because we've got a few tracks we haven't seen in a while or a few new ones. What are you most excited for?
I think in general, given Mercedes' strong end to the season, a true three-horse race would be nice. I think it's been a long, long time since we've had a three-horse race.
Yeah.
I can't see Mercedes disappearing, obviously. I can't see, going backward rather, I can't see Red Bull disappearing from at least being a top one or two car. We'll see if Ferrari hold their nerve. But I think a true three-horse race... constructor wise would be really interesting. See how Lewis does, if he's in a truly top row car again. Him versus Max, throw Charles in there, that could be some really really interesting race next year. Of course, that's, you wish for that every year,
that's the thing. We were thinking about this year, and I think that would 100% be my sort of want for the season, but now honestly after this season I just want to, if a two horse race I'll take it. Three would be lovely.
Who do you reckon will win the drivers' championships? I know we haven't had any pre-season testing.
I think
we don't know, but
that's a problem with Formula One, is the car puts you on the pedestal.
Yeah,
undeniably. So it's pretty hard to answer that question. But in my opinion, if you put everyone in a go kart, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton would be first and second in that order. In my opinion, I think given in this stage of their careers, so I think Max is going to go in the favourite. Easily.
I think he'll go in the favourite.
I think he's earned the right to go in as favourite for the next 5-6 years. He'll go into the favourite no matter what.
Yeah.
Depending on the car that he's got underneath him, of course. But you can't look any further past Max, I think. I think we truly are in the Max Verstappen era now.
Who are you plugging for the constructors then?
See, I think it really depends what turns up. Sergio Scioni is a good driver, but given how dominant that Red Bull was, by the end of the year to have not beaten Charles surprised me a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would say maybe Max and then Mercedes taking the constructors.
Yeah, I could definitely see Max then Lewis and George. Yeah. Interesting to see what order they'd be in if they're both challenging for race wins.
Lewis just couldn't get that car under control this year, but he was outscored for a lot of excuses,
I think, Lewis, with, he's sad about last year. He's sad about last year, so then therefore this year without a competitive car, it's really hard for him to switch on. But it's Formula One.
You're paid enough Formula money One, exactly. to switch on.
I think he put, he said this a lot, but just a post I saw today from him saying how he can't wait to get rid of this car and you're really being quite down on it. And I sort of said to Ellie, if you gave any of the teams below him that car, they'd think, oh my God, we've got a good car this year.
If you offer that car to Pierre Gasly this year, he'll rip your arm off.
So I think a little bit was, obviously that's not what he's used to, but at times it came across of just put your head down. And he did, but just cut the excuses, cut the moaning a little bit and just...
But I think maybe by the end of the year, he'd not learned his lesson. He's a grown man, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was definitely different.
I think, again, this season was probably, in many ways, could be good for him. Mm-hmm. This could have really reset him after what was a really tough year last year. Almost a year off, in many ways, from being at the front of the grid. And if anything, I think, given the competitor that he is, it's going to have really reignited his passion. If he turns up to pre-season testing... and they're top of the row, he's going to be licking his lips, and I think we're going to be in for a really interesting season.
I think it would be a great story if they could. And you know, you'd be stupid to doubt Mercedes and their factory.
Exactly.
So if they can bring a car that's just as good, or almost as good as the Red Bull, you know, I could see him 100% winning and fighting for it at least. So I think it would be good.
I think a big surprise was how long it took them to get back towards the front again. Mm. I think turning up with a bad car is one thing, but everyone knew Mercedes would get there eventually, and they kind of didn't, to be honest.
Yeah.
Mm. For if you think of the whole season, they kind of didn't get back there again.
But not to where we thought they would be.
No, which makes you think how much effort they've put into next year's car versus just giving up on this year's car.
Mm. Mm.
So that could be interesting.
Yeah, that could be. We'll have to wait until February to find out.
Oh,
3 months of twiddling our thumbs. Yeah. We'll just get really into Mario Kart. Oh, wait, I've already completed the game.
Well, it is relentless now, already. Formula One, though. We got to think it's November now. March is not that far away.
Well, February 20.
February, rather, sorry.
So 3 months from now is the first test.
Yeah,
so
you don't get much of a break.
By the time the World Cup's done anyway, so that'll be...
yeah, then it'll already be 2 months.
Sport,
yeah.
Then, you're almost there.
Bit of a detox over Christmas, and then we're nearly there. Football's back on after that, we've got a few rookies, because obviously this year we only had one rookie, and Joe, he did win Rookie of the Year, but I didn't realise I handed that out when there was only one. Who do you think will be the best rookie on the grid next year?
So who we've got? We've got Oscar Piastri,
Logan Sargeant.
Does Nick DeVries count as a rookie?
I think so. He has had one race.
Proper seat in F1, so I think he'd count.
Yeah, he does count. Yeah.
So I think maybe that experience will come in quite handy.
Yeah, he is old. He's 27.
But he's going to be stuck in an AlphaTauri.
Mm. And there's also that fairly unknown rookie, Alonso. He's like only quite young, 42.
I'm not sure if you can call it a rookie when you've won 2 world championships.
Nah, he's basically
in a new
having
team,
a rookie season every year.
But who do you think, of the people who have never driven a Formula 1 before, the three of them, who do you think is going to have the best season?
I think given the cars they're in, it's...
I just mean like compared to their teammates.
Compared to their teammates, yeah. See, compared to their teammates is interesting because... clearly, of all the rookies, the strongest teammate any of them have is Piastri's teammate of Lando Norris.
Yes.
I can't see a world that Piastri comes in and beats and outperforms Norris.
No.
I just can't see that happening. No. If he does, we've got a generational talent on our hands. Mm. Yeah. If he comes in and beats Norris, that's a huge, huge statement. So I think that might hamper his Rookie of the Year aspirations.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to be looking across the garage to Lando Norris, who is, in my opinion,
think,
one of the better drivers on the grid.
Do you think he'll do better than Daniel Ricciardo?
Yes, definitely.
It'd be hard to be worse.
Oh, we love you, Daniel.
Yeah.
So who are you going for then?
Because
I think in a Williams,
I think the front runner will be Piastri regardless.
Yeah.
I think when you're looking at Rookie of the Year, you can kind of disregard the teammate in many ways. And in terms of how who actually votes for it? Is it the public or is it just the media?
I don't know. It might be the drivers. It might be the media. I don't know.
I didn't have to vote this year.
on a subjective, our podcast subjective ranking. We'll have our own Rookie of the Year.
Oh, I think Piastri's going to be grabbing the most headlines no matter what he does, good or bad.
Yeah.
The drama that he's coming into F1 and without having driven a single lap is incredible, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think he has that added comparison of not just to Lando, but to Ricciardo. So as long as he does substantially better.
And to Alonso as well, really.
Mm.
Yeah. And Piastri's one that we've wanted in the sport for a while, but because of pay seats and that we haven't seen. So I think
he's the one who's been waiting in the wings for the longest, definitely.
So I think fans will be rooting for him because you don't want the sport to be full of Lance Strolls. You want it to be filled with Lewis Hamilton.
The 20 best people on the planet.
Yeah.
That's really how it should be. But I think you can't look past Piastri, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah.
Logan Sargeant, no matter what he does, is going to be in a Williams.
Yeah.
So he'll be lucky to scrape a point.
Again, maybe he scrapes a few points together and puts in some amazing
performances. Or maybe Williams are the surprise package and maybe they go on for the constructors. Who knows? It's too early to know.
It's just a brutal championship battle between him and Albon. It gets really ugly.
I think
I'd see it.
Nick versus Yuki. That's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah.
Yuki himself, relatively new to the sport. What will it be, his third season?
His third season. And he hasn't been incredible.
No,
you know,
he hasn't lit the world on fire,
so there's that'd be a good matchup.
But that's the thing, I think that's a fairer metric for a rookie to come in is to be against even Albon himself, actually, and Williams is relatively new to the
Yuki. Probably I'd be most sort of quietly confident if I was facing Yuki, I could pick a teammate of those three
in terms of trying to beat them, I think you would pick Yuki. Not that Yuki's a bad driver, but I don't think he's a bad driver. It's consistency for him, but he's so young.
And he's so small.
Yeah. But again, I think you can't look past Piastri on that one.
No, I would have to agree with that.
Yeah. He also has, the biggest sort of potential to upset a lot of fans and have the biggest crash.
That's what I mean. No matter what, the drama's going to be there from the offset.
Yeah. Yes, and it's going to be two young, two competitive drivers, hopefully, when they're lifting the trophies on the podium.
Who knows? Maybe that's how McLaren turn up next year. That would be really, really exciting.
To be fair, before the season, we were predicting a four-way championship battle.
Yeah, after another 2007 with Alonso and Hamilton.
Yeah.
You never know.
You never know.
I think we do know.
I can dream, damn it.
All you bettors out there, I would not gamble on that one.
Well, I'll put £1 on it and we'll see who's a millionaire. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming. How was the experience of our podcast?
I really enjoyed it. See the bare bones, see how it all works.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, it's been really good. Thank you.
Awesome. It's been very fun.
I've been your host, Ellie Ledwell.
I've been Harry McKay.
See you next time on Rear Winging It, the Formula One podcast.